Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 29 of the VCE Biology Podcast. This episode covers part of Unit 3, Area of Study 2, and I'll be talking about how the nervous system helps coordinate and regulate organisms. So the endocrine system is one control system of the body, but the other major control system of the body is the nervous system. And the nervous system can be broken up into two parts, the central nervous system and the peripheral nervous system. The central nervous system is basically composed of the brain and the spinal cord, and the peripheral nervous system is all the other nerve cells or neurons that lie outside the central nervous system. Now, the peripheral nervous system can be further broken down into two parts. The two parts are the sensory or afferent nervous system, and the sensory nervous system transmits information about the external and internal environment to the central nervous system, and the motor or efferent nervous system, the motor nervous system transmits information away from the central nervous system to the various effectors in the body. Now, the sensory nervous division of the peripheral nervous system is composed of two types of neurons, somatic sensory neurons. And these are neurons which bring information to the central nervous system from the external environment via sense organs, so information about touch, taste, sight, sound, and smell. And there's also visceral sensory neurons, and these bring information to the central nervous system from the internal environment, for example, from our heart or our intestines, from internal organs. So somatic sensory neurons and visceral sensory neurons make up the sensory nervous division of the peripheral nervous system. Now, the motor division of the peripheral nervous system can also be broken up into two parts, the somatic nervous system and the autonomic nervous system. So the somatic nervous system is also called the voluntary nervous system. So it conveys signals, it sends messages to skeletal muscles. And so it's called voluntary because basically you can control your muscles. So close your fist right now, move your fingers around. You're controlling your hand movements using the somatic nervous system. Now, the second part of the motor division of the peripheral nervous system is called the autonomic nervous system. And the autonomic nervous system deals with the involuntary actions of the body. So things like breathing or heart rate or sweating. So it controls all the unconscious responses, and the autonomic nervous system can be broken down into two major subdivisions. The sympathetic division increases energy use and prepares the body for action in an emergency situation like a fight or a flight, and it does things like increasing the heart rate and the metabolic rate. The other division is the parasympathetic division, and this enhances activities that conserve energy, such as digestion and slowing down the heart rate. So just to sum up all the parts of the nervous system, there's the central nervous system, which is composed of the brain and spinal cord, and then there's the peripheral nervous system. And so this delivers information to the central nervous system via the sensory nervous system, and that can be either via somatic sensory neurons, which are information from the external environment, or visceral sensory neurons, which send information from inside the body. And then the peripheral nervous system controls the body, so sends messages from the central nervous system to the body, and it either does that using the somatic nervous system, and so that's things that we have conscious control over, or it sends messages via the autonomic nervous system, and that's the system which is unconscious, the system that we don't have control over. Phew, I need a break. Now, on a cellular level, the nervous system is composed of some very special cells called neurons. And neurons are cells which are capable of sending both electrical and chemical messages around the body. Now, there are three basic types of neurons. There's effector or sensory neurons, and those neurons detect a change in either the external or internal environment, and then they transmit the information to the central nervous system. So effector or sensory neurons, they transmit information to the central nervous system. And then there's effector or motor neurons, and they basically transmit information away from the central nervous system, and they send information to effectors like glands or muscles so that a response can take place. And the last type of neuron is connecting neurons or interneurons. And these are generally located in the central nervous system. And they basically link sensory neurons to effector or motor neurons. So neurons send electrical messages around the body using a special long fiber they've got called an axon. So the electrical message travels down the axon until it gets to the axon terminals. And at the axon terminals, the electrical impulse is transmitted across a small gap to another neuron or to a gland or to a muscle. So the impulse is carried across this gap by chemicals called neurotransmitters. So neurotransmitters are produced in the end of the axon and are packaged up in synaptic vesicles. So the small gap between two neurons is called a synapse. And the small gap or the junction between a neuron and a muscle is called a nerve-muscle junction. So the neurotransmitters, which when they're released from the axon, they cross that little gap, either the synapse or the nerve-muscle junction, and then they bind to receptors on the next cell so that the message is passed on. Now some neurons, they send signals via, instead of neurotransmitters, via neurohormones. So these neurohormones are released into the blood, just like regular hormones, and they travel to a target organ where the signal is transduced via signal transduction, and the receptor cell responds. For example, the hypothalamus, which is a part of the brain, has lots of different types of neurons, and each neuron produces a different kind of neurohormone. And each neurohormone is released into the blood and travels to one of the cells of the pituitary gland where they exert their effect. And the effect is basically to stimulate the pituitary gland into releasing another hormone into the bloodstream so that some message or some effect is caused. So the body has billions of neurons in it, and each neuron can be connected, you know, to 100 other neurons. So there's different types of neural pathways in the body. There can be diverging pathways, and this is where a single neuron connects to lots of other neurons, and maybe those neurons connect to lots of other neurons. So basically one neuron can end up affecting lots of other cells. And then there's converging pathways, and this is where lots of nerves all join together to fewer nerves, and then those fewer nerves all end up joining up to one nerve. So lots of neurons end up just affecting one neuron, so all the messages are combined into one and only one single message is carried on. So neural pathways can be quite complicated, but neurons can even send different types of messages. For example, they can send an excitatory response to a neuron, which generates an action potential, which then results in a response. Or they can send an inhibitory response to a neuron, which stops an action potential being generated, which results in no response. And to top all that off, some venomous animals even produce toxins, and these toxins act on the neurons in the nervous system. And they can cause paralysis, so which means basically that stops the neurons firing. They can cause pain, so they can trigger off pain neurons. They can even cause death unless treatment is obtained. Fortunately, because we're so clever with our biology and medicine, we've been able to develop treatment for many animal toxins. So we've developed compounds called antitoxins, and these react with the toxins in the body to destroy their normal abilities. And just quickly, while I'm talking about medicine and the nervous system, we've actually developed drugs called painkillers, and painkillers act by basically blocking the passage of nerve impulses from pain receptors. So medicine's doing quite a bit for the nervous system. Now, we've talked about the central nervous system being composed of the brain and spinal cord. And I'm sure you've already figured out that the central nervous system is really, really important. Your brain is really, really important. The central nervous system is so important, they get their very own special bones to protect it. So the skull protects the brain and vertebrae protect the spinal cord. Now the largest part of the brain is the cerebrum, and this is the thinking part of the brain. Humans have got a very big cerebrum because we're pretty good thinkers. The cerebrum's got a folded surface called the cerebral cortex, and different parts of the cerebral cortex actually control different parts of the body. So one part controls your arm and, you know, one part controls your lips and things like that. So the cerebrum is also divided into two halves, a left and a right half, and these are called cerebral hemispheres. And the two cerebral hemispheres are connected via axons, which run along the corpus callosum. Now, within the brain, there's two special structures called the thalamus and the hypothalamus. The thalamus receives impulses from sensory neurons and directs them to various parts of the brain where they're interpreted. So the thalamus is really important in getting information into the brain. The hypothalamus regulates the release of many hormones via the pituitary gland, and it also controls lots of aspects of homeostasis. So the hypothalamus controls, you know, temperature maintenance, keeps humans at about 37 degrees. It maintains water balance and blood pressure and things like that. The brain stem is a part of the brain down the bottom, and it connects the brain to the spinal cord. It consists of the midbrain, the pons, and the medulla oblongata. So not only does it connect the brain to the spinal cord, but it also controls more basic functions like heart rate and breathing. And one other part of the brain I'll talk about is the cerebellum, and it controls complex muscle movements and coordination. So the brain's really complicated, and it's got lots of different parts to it which do lots of different functions. And we're actually learning quite a bit about the brain at the moment, and we do this by using lots of different measurement techniques. So there's a thing called an electroencephalogram, or an EEG, and that's something which measures the electrical activity of the brain. We've got something called a PET, or a position emission tomography, and what that does is that it detects the amounts of glucose being used by different parts of the body. So if a part of the brain is using lots of glucose, that means that part of the brain is very active, maybe when it's doing a particular thing. Another thing is a CAT scan, or computerized axial tomography, and that's basically like a super duper x-ray, which shows us all about what the brain's doing. So we've got all these different measuring techniques at the moment, which are teaching us more and more about the brain every day. Now, the nervous system works with the endocrine system to control and regulate our bodies, and they do things slightly differently. So the endocrine system releases hormones, and hormones are chemicals which are transmitted over long distances by the blood, whereas in the nervous system, electrical messages are transmitted by neurons, and then the signal is transmitted by neurotransmitters to another neuron, so it crosses a synapse, or to a gland or muscle, so it crosses a nerve-muscle junction. So while the endocrine system just uses chemicals, the nervous system uses both electrical impulses and chemicals to ensure the message is passed along. And because the nervous system sends messages electrically, whereas the endocrine system sends messages in the blood, the nervous system sends messages much more quickly throughout the body. Also, because hormones travel in the blood, a hormone action continues for a much longer time after the initial stimulus is given than a comparable nervous action. So a nervous action happens and then it's over, whereas a hormone action, the hormone can travel around in the blood for, you know, minutes or even hours. So the nervous system and the endocrine system work together to control the body. But the process of maintaining a constant internal environment, or homeostasis, is a great example of the way those two systems work together to control the body. For example, the human body temperature is maintained at a very constant 37 degrees, and this is controlled by both the nervous and endocrine system. So the homeostatic control of thermoregulation starts with the hypothalamus in the brain. So the hypothalamus receives information about if it's a bit too hot or a bit too cold. If it's a bit too cold, it'll send a message via the pituitary gland, which will release some hormones into the bloodstream, and they'll work to increase metabolism, which will increase heat production. It might also send a message via the autonomic nervous system to blood vessels in the skin, and it'll make them contract a bit, so it'll decrease heat loss. It might send a message by the somatic nervous system to our muscles so that we do something like put on clothes or go and stand next to a heater. So you can see that both the nervous system and the endocrine system work together to, in this example, thermoregulate our bodies. And that brings episode 29 of the VCE Biology Podcast to a close. I'm Mr. Barlow, and thanks for listening.